Well, this is Karen Testerman, and we have in studio with us Kathy Rago, who is a former legislator and now is the national,
she is the area coordinator
for Networks for Education Opportunity, NEO.
Right,
and
you've
got some good success going on with NEO right now, right?
Yes, we are, actually. I am very thrilled to tell your audience that we so far have over 500 children that have applied for scholarships.
That's with almost double what it was last month.
Yeah, it's growing every single day.
That's phenomenal. And these are people who have to pass a means test in order to qualify to be on the list for consideration, correct?
Correct. Actually, to qualify, it's a financial qualification. The family's income cannot exceed 300% of the federal poverty level. For example, what we have found is the average family size and income of those 500 children has been about a family size of 5 with a family income around $45,000. The 300% number for the 2013 poverty guidelines for a family of 5 is $82,710.
Wow.
That's a huge difference.
Right, right.
As a matter of fact, just so your listeners know, there is a Senate hearing tomorrow. It's going to be at 1 o'clock. The Senate Health, Education, and Human Services Committee is going to have a public hearing on HB 370, which is the bill that the Democrats are trying to pass to try and repeal this tax credit program.
It just came into effectiveness and being on the 1st of January this year.
Correct.
And you already have 500 applicants, and you've had many donations from businesses, although you're still looking for more.
Yes, we are still looking for more.
And yet, before the program has even really gotten a chance to get off the ground, the Democrats want to repeal it.
Correct.
Okay. Well, that sounds like we really care about the children, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. That's where we get back to. Yes, they're all about the middle class and caring for the middle class. And that's only when it's convenient for them.
Well, at any rate, there's been a number of things that they've done this term so far, and they've only been in session less than 3 months. So I think it's very interesting that they want to celebrate the murder of children. Apparently what they've decided to do on that is to put it on the shelf. So now they've tabled it. What does that exactly mean?
Oh, you're talking about the H.R. 6,
yes.
Which was the House resolution commemorating Roe v. Wade.
That's the one.
Yes, that's one. Actually, unfortunately, I usually on Wednesdays I watch the legislature in action, and I actually stopped watching after a certain point, so I missed that whole debate. But putting it on the table, in essence, kills a bill because someone has to take it off the table. And my understanding was that they weren't going to have the votes to pass it. And there were quite a number of people signed up to speak against the resolution. And so the Democrats decided just to table the resolution. So it's just going to sit there until someone takes it off, which may never happen.
Hmm. And does it have to be someone of the same party that put the bill on to table it, or that introduced it, or are there little nuances like that?
Yeah. To be honest with you, I don't really remember. I imagine there are nuances. I know there's some situations where it has to be someone from the majority vote.
Okay.
That was in the majority of the vote that has to pull some things off. But to be honest with you, I'm not 100% sure on that. So don't hold me to it.
Okay. Well, you know, it's another one of those things. I just don't understand how you can celebrate the elimination of the next generation as being something that we want to hold out there as something that we think is great.
Well, I find it interesting because last year I was the sponsor of a HCR, which is a House concurrent resolution, which required the House and the Senate to both vote in favor of it. And my resolution was in support of pregnancy crisis centers that actually are out there trying to help women such as the Care Nets, those type of organizations. And that did pass the House and the Senate last year.
Celebrating life. Life and encouraging those girls to either keep their children or put them up for adoption.
Correct.
To allow that life to be in existence.
Right. And so I find it, because Representative Bouchard was one of the ones that was adamantly, vocally opposed to the pro-life resolution. And she's actually one of the key sponsors of this Roe v. Wade, Let's Celebrate the Killing of 50 Million Babies resolution.
Right. Oh, it's really something. Well, as you know, Mary Murphy is one of our sponsors, and Mary is our financial guru, so to speak. We think she knows a whole lot, and she actually has the America's first independent franchise for Schwab, and she's the sponsor of this program, this hour. But one of the things that Mary keeps talking about is watching what's going on globally as well as what's going on here in the United States. And one of the things that's coming out now is Nigel Farage, who is from England, has basically said in all his years and all of his experiences, the desperation of the European Union's leadership, he said, never did he think they would ever resort to stealing money from the people's savings accounts. The simple fact is that they know they cannot let any country leave, no matter how small, for once one country goes, the whole deck of cards will come tumbling down. So now here is the clear, irreconcilable differences between the North and the South of Europe, and now they have done this in one country. That is taxing savings accounts. They are quite capable of doing it in Italy, Spain, and anywhere. So the message that it sends to people is, get your money out while you can. As far as his British constituents, he strongly recommends George Osborne, the Chancellor of the UK, to urge expats to remove all their money and do monthly transfers from home. Do not invest in the Eurozone, he concludes. You have to be mad to do so. So, and Mary keeps telling us, you know, it's coming to the United States. So keep your eye on what's going on out there, because we're not too far behind. She's been warning us about all of the debt that we've had in China, the Chinese have been divesting themselves of the U.S. dollar. The U.S. dollar has been downgraded. Our credit rating has been downgraded overall. We've got there's all sorts of little red flags that go on, and Bernanke is still printing money. They seem to think that it's the credit card is limitless and that we can continue to finance our own debt. And at some point, I think we fully expect to see bread for $1,000 and some ridiculous thing like that. So, you know, there are things that we can do. I still believe that the individual is capable of making a huge difference. It just, our founding father, I can't find it now. There, Samuel Adams said that it just takes one irate person burning fires of freedom in people's minds to make a difference. And I still think that that's quite possible for us. We may feel like we're in the minority, but you know, we really are in the mainstream, so to speak. And even though there are people who would like to tell us different, that is just not so.
Well, I'm actually very glad to see. I watch Bill O'Reilly pretty often, actually, and I always noticed how he never really went about talking about the debt. And so now he's become, this past month or so, I mean, he's like all over it. I mean, he is constantly exposing this $17 trillion debt, and that they anticipate it going to $20 trillion by the end of President Obama's term.
That's my daughter calling, and I'm sorry. I forgot to turn my phone off.
I know. I hear trains.
Now, once again, oh, well. Do as I say, not as I do. no, I really don't operate by that. I do try to follow the same rules that I follow, that I put out for other people. I kind of expect myself to follow. Unlike we find of some of the people who are in the capital city in Washington, D.C. But, yeah, it's interesting to me, too, that we now have a budget that's been proposed at the national level.
Oh, wow.
I want to say that.
After because how many years?
4 years. breaking every rule in the book. I mean, there is a law that says that they're supposed to pass an annual budget. And finally, Patty Murray, who is the head of the Finance Committee from Washington State. I'm familiar with Patty Murray. Actually proposed a budget by the Senate. But the biggest problem is it proposes $1 trillion worth of new taxes over the next 4 years, I think it is. It's some ridiculous amount of money. And now where are we supposed to get that? We're not able to borrow from China any longer. Of course, China also, a lot of these other countries are in similar situations to us. They're overspending and over. I guess it's Europe that really is that where the everybody's borrowing, but nobody has any money, and they're borrowing from each other, and it's you know, it's a real disaster. And you kind of say, how does that work? But I'm thankful that they finally decided to propose a budget that no one will vote for, and it's sort of a bogus budget. And then I understand that they're also considering the next continuing resolution. Now, to me, that's ridiculous. And I thought that they were supposed to start losing their pay if they didn't pass a budget, if they didn't come forward with something.
Yeah, that's laughable.
You don't believe them? Come on, Kathy.
I don't believe them at all. That they'll
actually
cut their pay.
Well, I thought Senator Ayotte was pushing that.
If they don't do their job. Yeah.
If they didn't do their job, or if it went to sequestration, they were supposed to lose their pay for a certain period of time.
Yeah, well, I doubt if that'll happen.
You don't sound real positive.
Nope.
Well, next week, the Supreme Court of the United States is going to take up several different cases regarding the definition of marriage and the DOMA law. So it should be very interesting. I find it remarkable that there are something like 1,100 different laws on the federal books that would be affected if we redefined marriage. And one of the arguments on the Defense of Marriage Act that was passed under President Clinton is that it really should be left up to the states. And while I can agree with that, I often wonder, okay, then what happens when you have things like federal income tax? When we passed the income tax amendment, didn't we now make it more or less up to the federal government to make a definition of what they're going to consider under various regulations and so forth. So when it comes to a family, and the IRS still defines the family as one man and one woman with children, or without children, I mean, still it's one man and one woman. If you want to get the marriage penalties, which they
can't really. I was going to say deduction. Is there a deduction? I don't think there is. It's a penalty.
Oh, there is marriage penalties. But if you want to participate with the marriage penalties, then you can. But they have a responsibility to make a definition on that. And they can't just go to 50 different definitions and talk about grow the size of government.
Well, you know, I find it interesting when you're talking about it. In one hand, it should be up to the states, but then on the other hand, because I look at California and the population voted on, what was it, the Proposition 8?
Yes.
The majority voted to keep the traditional meaning of marriage. Well, then you go and have these, what I call rogue judges, who decide to throw out what the people chose and just basically make it null and void. So how do you, I'm not sure how we deal with those issues where the people vote, they tell you what they want, and then we get this judge who goes, yeah, you guys don't know what you're doing. So I'm going to make null and void what you just
But
you wanted.
In reality, it's supposed to work the other way around, yeah. From my understanding, is that it's up to the executive to enforce it, except to the legislatures to pass the laws, the executive to enforce the laws, and the courts are supposed to interpret. But it's just an interpretation. It's an opinion. It's not – they're not supposed to be able to make it legal or not legal. So I don't understand how they continually – come in and
I don't either. It's like the judicial branch in some states are making laws, and they aren't allowed by our constitutions to do that, our constitution to do that, and yet they still do, and no one does anything.
Well, the fascinating thing I found is that I think it was yesterday that Reuters actually came out with a poll, and it was definitely in contradiction to the poll that the Washington Post put out. That said, the Washington Post came out and said that overwhelmingly the public was in favor of redefining marriage from natural man-woman status. And but Reuters, who actually signed on an amicus brief to support the redefinition of marriage. Now, this is really interesting. They have conducted a poll, and it's probably the largest poll ever, 24,452 people. And what they found and reported, and I have to give them credit for this, is that 4 in 10 actually support the definition, support redefining the definition of marriage. In other words, on average, 60% of America still agrees that marriage should be between one man and one woman. And one of the interesting points, of course, is always what kind of questions does the Washington Post pose versus what kind of questions did Reuters pose? And it turns out that if you're talking about legally benefits, that sort of thing, people are very sympathetic, and they don't want people to be without in general. But when it comes down to, do you really want to redefine the a family is, 60% of the people say, no, we like it just the way it is. It's proven out to be pretty basic. So, well, with that, it's time to take a short break, and we will be back on the other side.